Okay. We don't have all of our speakers here, but they're, I'm told they're on their way. So we're going to begin, since they were going to be at the end of the program, rather than keep you guys waiting any longer. I'm Terry Garcia. I'm currently the Executive Vice President at National Geographic, and that's probably not why I was asked to do this. I was also a commissioner on the President's independent commission investigating the Macondo well explosion. We delivered our report, I happen to have a copy right here, in January to the President. The commission expired on March 11th of this year, and so I am here in my private capacity, no longer speaking as a commissioner, but I do want to say a few words about the commission's work, our findings, and our recommendations. First of all, just a couple of observations. You know, so long as we need oil, and we do need it, we're going to be drilling in deep water because that's where the oil is. Number two, this commission, and I should have said this to begin with, did something that no other presidential commission has done in recent memory. We were on time. We were under budget. And there were no dissents. It was a unanimous opinion, set of recommendations that were delivered. Number three, this event could have been far worse. There was a point in time where industry experts actually feared that the entire reservoir, the 4 billion or so barrels, would seep out from the ocean floor and wreak total havoc. That it didn't happen, we're quite fortunate. Should another event like this, if the recommendations of the commission and a number of other groups are not heeded, the consequences could be even more severe than they were this time around. Finally, the phenomenon that we saw, at least one of them, and this is perhaps something that's characteristic of modern society. We've seen it with the meltdown of the banking system following the development of sophisticated financial instruments that even the individuals who developed them didn't quite understand or fully understand, or the space shuttle or now deep water drilling. But we had this ability to build it, but we couldn't fix it. And we saw that play out over months. For those of us, and when I was at NOAA, I was involved in the restoration of Prince William Sound in the Gulf of Alaska following the Exxon Valdez. For those of us who had been involved in that, we assumed when we got involved in this process, when we first heard about the blowout, that advances had been made, that technology had changed, that the industry had made significant progress. And I think many of us, perhaps most of us, were shocked to learn that very little progress had been made. In fact, in the midst of the crisis, a reporter for the New York Times observed, and I'll just quote, that cleanup has progressed so little that the biggest advancement in the Gulf of Mexico disaster, at least in the public's mind, is an oil-water separator based on a 17-year-old patent and promoted by the movie star Kevin Costner. Whether or not that's completely accurate, the point is that was the impression that the public had, and serious damage was done to the confidence of the public in the government and the industry. So our findings. First, this explosion did not have to happen. It was completely foreseeable and preventable. The fact that is the case makes the loss of the lives of these 11 men even more tragic. It resulted from multiple failures, not surprisingly, at multiple levels involving multiple entities. It was a failure of the industry, and this was one of our maybe more controversial findings in the commission. We said that this was systemic. It was not merely the act of one rogue element in the industry, but rather it was something that all of the industry shared. In fact, there were three major players that were involved in this failure, Halliburton, as well as BP and Transocean. Further supporting that notion is the fact that no one, Not a single member in industry had the capacity when this blowout occurred to effectively and in a timely way respond and contain the blowout. It took 3 months to contain it. So it was a responsibility that was shared across industry. The government obviously shared responsibility. There was a failure of the federal government. Oversight, as we now know, was compromised by the commingling in one agency of two very different functions. On the one hand, minerals management was required to make leasing decisions and to collect revenue. On the other, they were responsible for the regulation of environmental and health matters. You can probably guess, as we all know now, which of those received the priority. The regulations themselves did not keep pace with changes in the industry, with advances in drilling. Essentially, our regulators were outgunned, outmanned, underfunded, and it was a responsibility that really has to be shared by successive administrations and Congresses. You can't point to any one particular administration. That's okay. The environmental impact in our report, we spent some time on it, but the basic conclusion, and we'll talk some about that today, was that we just didn't have enough information to adequately opine on what the ultimate impact of this event would be on the environment. What we were able to say, however, was that the environment or the economic impact on this region was absolutely stunning and staggering. It came very close to crippling that region. The health effects, which we will also discuss, became of more and more concern. And finally, the lack of information, the lack of a baseline, the lack of data hampered the response, containment, as well as the recovery efforts. And we'll hopefully be able to touch on some of those issues in this panel. So what did we recommend? One, we recommended the creation of an independent safety agency that would be insulated from the pressures of leasing revenue so that its focus would be on the regulation of environmental and health issues. We urged the administration to upgrade existing regulations. We were lagging far behind other countries, and there's very little, in fact, no excuse for that. The United States should be the leader in this area, and we weren't. We urged that the administration and the Congress supplement the regulations with what's called a safety case approach, a risk-based approach to regulation. Rather than have a one-size-fits-all regulation that allows a regulator to go to the rig or to the company, check off the little boxes and say, okay, well, they've complied with everything that's in the regulations that we were told to check off, go ahead and drill. The industry, each company, should develop a plan that is specific to that particular well that addresses all of the risk and lays out a detailed plan on how to respond to events should things go sideways. This is a system that has been adopted by the UK and by Norway. Interestingly enough, it was adopted following their own catastrophic events. We urge that there be broader consultation among the federal agencies. One thing that became very clear in the course of the investigation was that the expert agencies oftentimes were not given a voice, or at least an adequate one, when regulations were being considered or permits issued. The Oil Pollution Act cap on liability right now is $75 million per incident, wholly inadequate for what happened. We urge that cap be changed. We didn't have a specific recommendation on whether it should just be eliminated or whether or what it should be raised to, but it does need to be addressed. We called on the industry to help itself. to create a self-regulatory body, much as the nuclear industry has done, so that the members of the industry who are actually complying with the regulations, who are the good players, the good actors, are not penalized by someone or some group that is not. We also recommended that the industry and the government invest in R&D. As I mentioned a moment ago, one of the obvious failings was the lack of investment in new technologies, whether it's response or containment we had had, or just understanding the impact of the use of dispersants. We were unfortunately required to rely upon 20-year-old information. Finally, before drilling is permitted anywhere, a company should demonstrate that it has the capacity to respond and to contain a blowout. It's pretty simple. The government must develop the capacity to oversee, effectively oversee, this industry. We called on the administration and the Congress to make a long-term commitment to the Gulf. This is a region that has been hit by multiple tragedies, whether in the form of recent hurricanes or the gradual erosion of wetlands and destruction of its ecology over the last several decades. Frontier areas have become a topic of discussion. What sort of regulation is going to be required for the Arctic? Again, the basic point that we made is that we're not telling industry that they cannot drill, but rather if you're going to drill, you must be able to demonstrate that you have the capacity to respond and to contain should there be an event such as we experienced in the Gulf. Finally, we made the recommendation, and we didn't go into detail, and perhaps we can comment on it today, that there needs to be incorporated into the National Contingency Plan a medical services protocol, which we didn't have in this case, and I think we're seeing the impact of that failure as well. So the purpose of our session today, and we have four panelists who will be with us to speak about the Deepwater Horizon oil spill.
Now we have four.
Excellent.
Anybody else?
Yeah. We left you the worst.
We have one more seat, so we can.
We left you the worst seat, though. Okay.
Whoever is sitting in the front row here is going to be drafted.
And would do a better job.
So we have Chris Delia, professor and dean, School of the Coast and Environment at Louisiana State University. Bernard Goldstein, who just joined us, professor of Environment and Occupational Health, Graduate School of Public Health, University of Pittsburgh. Dave Westerholm, director of the NOAA Office of Response and Restoration. Michal Friedhoff, policy director, and the office of Congressman Edward Markey. Chris has is going to have to leave us early today, so we're going to get you up and let you say a few remarks and perhaps even answer some questions, because I know you can't stay the entire time.
Yeah, I'd like to.
All right.